How to do buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. This episode is for Tuesday, February 25th, 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have a special guest. I'm sitting down with Ian Betteridge. Hi, Ian.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm very well now. I've got home. I'm sat down. Everything is good in the world.
That's excellent. Now, I just want to give people who may not be familiar with your name or maybe think, that sounds familiar, but I can't quite place him. Tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
So I first started using Macs in 1986, which means I've been using them almost as long as there have actually been Macs. Yeah. In 1989, I ended up working for Apple for a year, which was hilarious fun. So that was the John Sculley era, which was, it's a whole different world. I could talk about that for about 3 years, but I'm not going to. few years later, I ended up working for Mac User Magazine in the UK, which is very different to Mac User in the US. Very yes. different kind of magazine. Cannot mention the two together. Very different thing. And eventually I ended up editing it freelance for a while. I'm probably best known for Betteridge's Law of Headlines, which was an off-the-cuff blog post, which became a meme, which became basically a thing which is apparently now taught in journalism schools, which is... I keep bumping into people and they're like, oh yeah, I learned about you at journalism school. And I'm kind of like, it was a blog post. It was a joke. I made it up. It's not a serious thing.
But it is a serious thing. So what is Betteridge's Law?
So Betteridge's Law of Headlines is basically that any headline which ends with a question mark can be answered with the word no. So the classic one would be, is Apple doomed? No.
You know? Yes.
And I think the original one came, it was something to do with an Apple post. It kind of drives some journalists mad. So I used to get into constant Twitter spats with Josh Topolsky, who used to work on The Verge, because yep. he hated it so much.
And, yes.
I'm sorry. If you're listening to this, sorry, Josh. I'm really sorry.
Don't be sorry.
It was nothing personal. I try not to be sorry too often. So... and these days, I'm basically a media suit. So I spend my life looking at budgets and headlines and more budgets and spreadsheets. And I think it's like I've evolved from kind of using words to just talking about numbers all day now.
Okay. So I will say that I personally have taken Betteridge's Law to heart. And I do point out occasionally at Mac Observer, if somebody writes a headline as a question, like, do you really mean that? Because Betteridge's Law. So
you are very wise.
My favorite example of this is years ago when I was still at Tua, when there was still a Tua, we went to CES, and it was when Samsung was debuting their tablet, their smaller tablet, the Note. And they had this giant banner hung on the side of the convention center. And the reason I remember it is because Brett Terpstra took a photo of it. And then he like marked up the photo and it said, is it a phone? Nope. Is it a tablet? Nope. And then he just sort of corrected the bottom line, which then said it's the Samsung Galaxy. Nope. And that was the one that stood out to me forever. And you could tell because that was many years ago. And I still vividly remember him sending me that picture. The Samsung Galaxy. Nope. So
did Samsung back then try and actually call them phablets, or did they just get called phablets by people?
You know, I don't remember, but it sounds like a goofy enough thing that I can't put it past them. So, Ian, the reason I wanted to have a chat with you today is because... I did see on Twitter where you were talking about Apple hardware and how it stacks up against other people's hardware, or in some cases, which is why this caught my eye, mm-hmm. it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be true that Apple hardware was the best designed hardware in the business. And I'm not just talking about hardware in the sense of how it works, because there's this big thing about like, design is how it functions, which you get again and again and again. Yeah, I mean, it is, but design is also how it looks, how it feels, kind of how you, do you enjoy touching it or not? It's so many different facets to design. And I think when you look at the physical product, there's so many other good designs out there now that are just more interesting and more playful and more usable in a lot of ways than Apple's designs are. It just feels like Apple has stopped experimenting and doing interesting things with its design. I mean, you think back to the days of like when the first iMac came out and how amazing that was because it was so different and how it was a beautiful piece of design because you just looked at it and wanted it. It wasn't functionally different from any Mac ever, apart from it was worse because it was USB-C and where are my local tool ports? My God.
There was no floppy drive. I do remember that being sort of exactly, terrifying. But the biggest, like, the biggest thing about it at the time that I recall is that is its utter unapologetic lack of beige.
It was unapologetically plastic as well. You know, yeah. It was a beautiful thing. And you kind of look at the designs now and they haven't really changed much for quite a while. The Mac Pro accepted, and obviously the Mac Pro is in a weird market of its own, so yeah. you almost forget about that. But you look at the MacBook and it's like, oh, is that a MacBook from this year or is it last year or the year before? Or And don't even get me started on keyboards. I mean, I think we should just agree not to even go there. So just
we tried to almost record. For the record, we did almost try to record an entire episode about Kelly and Ian have strong feelings about keyboards, just so everybody's aware.
Strong.
Yes, listeners of the show know how I feel about keyboards, and particularly about Apple's latest attempt. And the rejoicing that the 16-inch laptop is making an attempt to recover from that. But, yes.
I am with you, sister. Keyboards. We are on the side of justice and truth on this one.
Yes.
And the keyboard is such a really good example as well, because it is kind of like, you think about the fundamentals of a laptop and how much time you spend on a keyboard, and Apple has made the wrong kind of design choices around that, because obviously, you know, this generation of keyboards came about originally on the teeny tiny, really lovely object to desire 12-inch MacBook that was, you know, 1500 quid or whatever it was when it first came out. And that had to have really, really small travel. But then it's just gone, aha, we can make everything thin and just sacrifice something about it. You know, so it just feels like their design mojo is not what it was.
Yeah. And I think, for me, the evolution of the laptop keyboard was we had the silver keyboard that was nice and springy, and there weren't big gaps between all the keys. And then we got the Chiclet keyboard, where there is a gap between all of the keys, and that keyboard is still usable, and you can type on. Like I feel like anyway, like I can type on it; it's fine. It doesn't make me happy to type on it, but like I can get it done. And I've spent a small amount of time with this butterfly keyboard nonsense, and I absolutely see why people don't like it. Aside from the fact that it can be. That keyboard can be brought to its knees by a stray crumb of something, you know, and nobody ever eats in the vicinity of their laptop, so it's not like that happens all that often, right? So, like, partly that, but also partly more than one person has told me this story, but the one I remember in particular is from Allison Sheridan, who said that her husband got a new keyboard. Hi, Steve. Hi, Allison. And Steve got a new laptop. It had this keyboard on it. And every single thing he wrote sounded like an angry manifesto. And at one point she could hear him typing. And she went in and was like, what on earth are you doing? He was like, what? I'm writing an email to my mom. And it was like, you know, like it wasn't a big deal. But, you know, she's like, everything sounds like, you know, an angry manifesto, no matter what it is. And, you know, like on top of, you know, and that's not like the nice clacky sound that we were talking about earlier, you know, the pleasant sound of what it sounds like when you have a keyboard with actual throw and usage. So I want to hear about some of
the nail. I mean, you hit the nail on your head when you talked about, do you enjoy using it? You know, and to me, that's a really big, important part of the design is, does the design bring you pleasure every time you use something? And with a lot of the design choices that Apple has made, it doesn't feel like they're thinking like that. It feels like they're thinking like, how can we make this thin and how can we make it the kind of ultimate object, you know, the purest possible object of its kind. It's like the iPhone. I mean, the iPhone, I do love my iPhone. I been using a Pixel 4 lately for lots of different reasons, which is fun in a different kind of way. But with the iPhone, you can kind of see they're trying to make the ultimate kind of black slab of glass. And I was talking to somebody yesterday who was just saying, I really wish they still made a white iPhone because I really liked my white iPhone. Why don't they make a white iPhone? It's simple design choices like that that just seem to be neglecting in pursuit of this pure form of electronics.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a question about this, and I want to get your stance on that. But first, I do want to spend a moment just to make sure that we get our sponsor mentioned during the show today. Our sponsor this week is Zapier. And Zapier is the easiest way for you to automate your work. The short version of this is that it helps you connect all of your stuff to all of your other stuff. The concrete example I can give you is one from our own Dave Hamilton, who likes to read out the people who become paying members of MacGeekGab. And the way he used to have to do that was to go find all of those transactions by hand, copy all of the information out of each of those transactions, and then move them over to a spreadsheet where he would read them from the spreadsheet. He was able to take Zapier and hook that stuff up so that it happened for him automatically. So all you have to do is go to our special link. This is just for you, my listeners. And if you go to zapier.com/TDO, that's ZAPIER.com/TDO, you can connect the apps that you use the most, and then Zapier will handle the rest. You can add things to a spreadsheet like Dave is doing. You can do all kinds of stuff with that. And you will get a free 14-day trial from Zapier by doing so. One more time, that's zapier.com/TDO. And we'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show today. Now, Ian, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was you were sort of, you know, this is a two-part question, but my first question is, you had talked about how other people are doing more interesting, more playful designs with their hardware. So I'd like, if you would, for you to name some names.
So two things which really pop into mind is, obviously, I think Google is doing some really interesting stuff with its hardware. And that playfulness is definitely an aspect that they're focusing on a lot. So if you look at I have in front of me right now the not pink version of the Pixelbook Go. And they're right, it is not pink. I'm not quite sure what color it is. It's kind of dusty. It's, you know, it's really pretty. And underneath it, it's got this kind of scalloped, it's really hard to describe. It's like a scalloped effect on the bottom of it.
Okay.
And it's in a kind of darker color. And it's really beautiful. You know, it's genuinely a thing which is beautiful. And it feels great in the hand, that you want to hold it. And I think that is something that is kind of really underrated, is the tactile nature of design, you know. And that, again, is not something that Apple really is focusing on at the moment. So I think Google is doing some really, really interesting stuff around that. And their kind of head of industrial design is a woman called Ivy Ross. And it's worth watching some of the stuff that she talks about in videos on YouTube around using touch as a real signifier in design work. The other interesting people are really Microsoft, which sounds the most crazy thing in the world when you talk about how Microsoft, the people who do Outlook, which much as I have to use Outlook for work, I'm not going to say anything bad around it, but in terms of their hardware, they're just doing some really interesting things. I mean, I said at the start, I have too much money and spend all of it on hardware, basically, but I've got a Surface Pro X as well. And that's a really interesting piece of design because, you know, functionally, obviously it runs Windows, but the way that you use it is affected by the fact that it's incredibly thin, that it has LTE built in. It's like the offspring of an iPad and a Windows laptop, but in a good way, like a good way, honestly.
Interesting.
And it's very black. So it's the opposite in the sense of Google's approach of making everything playful and interesting colors. But it really works, you know, and they've got the kickstand on it, which is just a really good piece of intelligent, thought out design that actually means you can use it in your lap, which, you know, so many of those kind of 2-in-1s, you can't use them in your lap. It does depend on the length of your thigh bones, though. If you're really tall, you can use anything in your lap. If you're a short if you're short like me, it's like you've got about 12 inches at most of leg to type on, mm-hmm. end up looking like a dinosaur because you're going tippy tappy type with your hands.
I know that feeling. Yeah, I too am not standard adult size, so I completely understand where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, so tall people, they're like, yeah, this is perfectly fine, why don't you get out of here? Yeah. But it's just a really good piece of design work, and for that to come out of Microsoft just feels weird, you know.
It's,
it just
proof
feels weird
we live in
doing this stuff.
It's proof that, you know, that old Chinese curse is coming true. May you live in interesting times.
Yeah.
You know, I've been saying for like a year and a half now, like, obviously all bets are off. And this is how you know, because Microsoft made hardware that looks really nifty and you kind of want to use it. Now, my follow-up question is the thing that I'm curious about is because it really, to me, seems like a lot of the... make it thinner, make it lighter, and you know, all of that kind of stuff was very much the Johnny Ive aesthetic, the Sir Johnny Ive aesthetic. Hi, Charlotte. So if that was him and he has stepped back from some of that, do you think that maybe, cause it's going to be a little while before everything that he, you know, spent a lot of time directly designing kind of works itself out of the pipeline. But do you think that maybe now that he's not there in quite as looming, I guess, of a capacity as he used to be, do you think that maybe, cause you know, like with the iPhone 11 and 11 Pro, when we just did that this last fall, you know, they didn't talk about it being thinner and they didn't talk about it being lighter. Mm. They just talked about it, you know, existing and like, here's all these cool things that it'll do for you. And you know, it wasn't a big deal that it was so much thinner and so much lighter and all of that. It was just cool. And do you think that maybe we might get a little bit of new interesting direction out of Apple now that the drive to make everything thinner and lighter perhaps is not as strong as it used to be?
I think it's a really... That's a brilliant question. And I think, yes, I'm hopeful that we will. I think the iPhone 11 Pro Max Res High, whatever huge long name it ended up being called, is really interesting because they've looked at that and they've gone, okay, we can compromise in different directions. Because every phone design, every small device design is all about compromise.
Yes.
You know, you can have it really thin, but you lose battery life. You can have it thicker, you gain battery life, but you gain weight. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to think about all the different implications for how you manufacture something. And in Apple's case, how you recycle something, because obviously they're really hot on taking products back and being able to kind of recycle as much as they can out of them. So every single phone is a set of compromises. And I think it's really promising that they actually went, you know what, let's just make it a bit thicker. And when you pick it up for the first time, it's like, oh my God, they made a brick, because you're so used to kind of really, really light, thin phones. Mm-hmm. And then like, you've still got battery power a day and a half later and you're thinking, my God, yes, this is the best thing ever.
Yes.
So yeah, I think it's really promising. And also I really love that green color. It sounds stupid, but I think that even that is kind of a step forward because
it's
like, okay, we can do things that have got color to them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's only a hint of kind of green. It's not like it's bright or anything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I think the next kind of really interesting one is going to be whatever they do for the next iPads, because the iPad is still kind of finding its form a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the design of the Pro, but you can see how that could evolve into just being boring, boring, boring year after year. So
yeah.
I'm kind of hoping they do something a little bit more playful with that too.
Yeah. I definitely, because I went from an iPhone 8 to an 11 Pro, it did feel sort of dramatically different because it is a bigger phone. I still am kind of grumpy about the size of the phone, but that's because I wear women's pants and pockets are a whole thing. And I don't, that's a whole other episode in and of itself. So, the thing about like you said, the thing about it was, it did feel heavier, but it didn't feel dramatic, you know? And like after about 20, like I got way used to the weight, much, much faster than I got used to not having a home button. And I even got the white phone, and the front, you know, the front bezel is not white, like you were talking about, you know, somebody saying, and I'm like, I have a white phone and it still doesn't seem like a white phone, which I am disappointed in, but, the, like using it, I still occasionally, like even now, like I got it when they at launch, and even now, occasionally I will go to grab my phone and I will feel across what I think is the bottom for the home button to make sure I'm holding it right side up when I pick it up or take it out of my bag or whatever. And then I'm like, where's the, oh yeah, you know, it's even still, I will, I will every so often, look for the home button and not find it because like, I just had one for so long. But yeah, like you were saying, you know, not really having to worry about battery life anymore. That kind of thing. Like I have a battery, a little battery pack that I carry around in my bag. And, I haven't taken it out for my own phone in definitely not for my own phone in 2020. And probably late last year, you know, like with this one, I don't know that I ever had to charge, my 11 Pro on the battery pack. I do carry it around and I occasionally need it. Like somebody else will go, oh no, my phone is dying or whatever. And I've, you know, and I'm Kelly on the spot there with the battery and able to help them out, but mostly I haven't needed it. So, you know, like you said, like, I absolutely feel like that's a fair trade. And like the camera sort of made me forget anything about the phone that I didn't like, because the camera in the 11 Pro particularly is spectacular. And, you know, especially compared to the 8 and like the refinements in Face ID and that kind of stuff, like those things are noticeable. But one thing that I honestly liked about it was that it did feel a little bit substantial. I didn't feel like I needed to be quite so delicate with it, I guess. That's a very nice feeling to not have to worry so much, to not have to feel like I've paid all this money for this thing and it's a delicate flower, right? Like I need it to be a tiny bit durable. I don't carry it around in my back pocket or throw it down concrete steps or anything, but it's nice to not have to feel like, oh, it's very thin and it's prone to bend and all that kind of stuff. Like I don't have to worry about it so much. So that's nice.
I managed to drop mine on concrete after about 3 days, and it makes a really scary sound when you drop it onto concrete, but it didn't shatter or anything. So I was like, oh my God, thank God for that.
Well, the sound is amplified. That sound is amplified by your Visa card cringing at the same time, I think.
Absolutely.
Is where that comes from. So,
and you watch it fall in slow motion. It's like, oh no.
Yes. I have done that with previous phones that cost way less money and still was like, it can be terrifying. Ian, if the people want to talk to you or find out, you know, the next time that you declare something that turns out to be law, where can the people find you?
Best place is Twitter. I'm always on Twitter, and I am Ian Betteridge on Twitter, so I'm pretty easy to find. I think there's only one other like reasonably well followed Ian Betteridge, and he's an Australian folk singer, so that's not me.
So if you start seeing a bunch of stuff on Twitter about Waltzing Matilda, that's probably not Ian.
Definitely not me.
All right, thank you very much, Ian, for coming by to talk to me today. I appreciate it.
Been a pleasure.
And if you want to hear more from Ian, or if you have feedback about Betteridge's Law or anything else at Mac Observer, as always, you know where to find us. Observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or comments in the show notes. I'm your host, Kelly Gamott. I will talk to all of you later. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.